soon as I heard Jody talking about this, I told her, we will present this in Ames and we will get people there. I don't care how I have to go about getting this done, because people need to see this beautiful thing that you have done to marry the arts and the sciences.
Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm your host for the day, Greta Anderson. And that clip you heard describes a dance performance that will be part of Wednesday's 10th Annual Iowa Water Conference, and it is free and open to the public. I'll be airing interviews with Melissa Miller, the event organizer, as well as with the artist and scientist who created the performance. Then Ames resident and affordable housing advocate Terry Potter will be here to tell us about another event Wednesday focusing on solving our community's housing crisis. Meteorologically, we've got a windy spring day ahead of us today. On Tuesday, it'll be much warmer, getting up to 68 degrees. Wednesday, rainy and cold. And as far as Thursday, I don't think you want to know. Spring is starting us out on a fickle note. And of course, while the calendar says spring is here, it also says that spring break is over. Today, students of all ages will be returning to school, and with them, their teachers, including the first guest on our show. Susan Norris is known as Coach Norris to her students at Meeker Elementary, and we'll talk about why, because she doesn't teach phys ed. This master teacher has devised an intriguing project to help her 500 students visualize their collective impact on the world and especially on the school's supply closet. So welcome to the show, Susan Norris.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, now that we've teased the audience a little bit, let's clear up the mystery. What is it that you do at Meeker?
I teach kindergarten through fifth grade art. I have 23 classes of students from kindergarten through fifth grade and one fantastic group of special ed students. We have a four-day rotation in which each class receives 40 minutes of art instruction in the rotation. And we work with all media, all that we can, from paper and pencil to clay to fibers to construction using found materials and objects, and whatever else we can think up to do.
All right. So kids get 40 minutes of art a week.
And every 4 days. So there is the occasion where they have art twice in 1 week, if that's the way the cycle goes.
Okay. And you are Coach Norris because?
I believe that is what I do. I'm a cheerleader and a coach, and I try to get the kids to express their authenticity and who they are rather than stand and deliver a lesson about this is a contour line or this is how we make a pinch pot. I want them to engage actively in the making of art.
Okay. So let's hear about the 500 Project, which is something you've gotten the whole school involved in and
yes.
Funding for, too.
Yeah. This began in the fall after several years of saying to my students, you can only use one piece of paper during an art class period because we have nearly 500 students. And the kids would parrot that back to me. Why can you only have one piece of paper? Because we have 500 students. And it occurred to me after a while, they weren't really understanding the concept of what a great amount 500 of something is. So I had the thought, if we make 500 representations of the number 500 over the course of this school year, perhaps the students would grasp what I mean when I say you may only have one piece of paper during one art class period or one ball of clay or, you know, one plate full of paint, whatever the case may be.
Right. So representations of the number 500. What does that look like in real life?
Here is one of the best and most dedicated projects is to make 500 origami ninja stars.
Ninja stars.
And I would say it takes about a minute now for the young man who spearheaded this project in the fall to make one. So you do the math, that would take 500 minutes at least to create 500 of these. And he comes in two or three times a week during his lunch recess to make two or three of these. And he's been working on it since September. So that's one example. And on the table here, this is radio you cannot see, I have brought six examples of 500 projects made on index cards. One in which I drew 500 dots in columns, and one in which I drew the letters of the alphabet repeated 19 times on one index card. So, so that would be the other end, an individual project where I can, I or a student can make 500 of something in maybe 30 minutes, to a collaboration where, well, I have a group of girls that collected 500 images of faces.
Oh.
And I'm hoping we can find a way to present those. But if not, it's a fantastic collection.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is not the numbers 500. This is actually the quantity, 500.
Yes. We have in our display window, we have a giant piece of candy corn made of 500 little pieces of candy corn. And that was, of course, made in October. We have a mason jar full of 500 pebbles. We have 500 people made of coffee stirring sticks stuck into a big piece of styrofoam. It's a lovely little crowd.
Oh, my. And so all of these ideas come from the students themselves.
Yes, yeah. And it's been a wonderful learning experience for me. Because when someone presents an idea, I need to pause and smile and say, wow, that's a great idea. Tell me how you think we can finish that. Now we have a deadline of April 22nd. So that's
Earth Day.
That's Earth Day. We'll have an evening at Meeker School where we'll present all these 500 projects, and we'll be making three or four more with our visitors that come to the event.
Oh, neat. Yeah. And you hope to have 500 of these 500 projects.
I know. People think I'm crazy. But we have – this is what I do as an art teacher. I need to present that as a possibility, and I'm not giving up until April 22nd gets here. And we have a big list on the wall in a prominent place at school. We're up to 110.
Hmm.
And many people had plans to do things over spring break.
Okay. So, we'll see whether those materialize.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can anybody do this? Can
yes,
I do it?
You can. In fact, that's a wonderful thing about being on the radio. If you are inclined to be part of our project and wish to make 500 of something or share with us a collection of 500 buttons in a mason jar or something like that, I wonder if I could give my email address or
absolutely
some way. Okay. You could email me at Susan, S-U-S-A-N, dot T-U-F. COOKIE, toughcookie@gmail.com.
Oh, I don't know how tough you are. You've got a great smile and enthusiasm, but you sure kick ass when it comes to art projects.
Yeah, thanks. We have found the most challenging thing about making 500 projects is keeping track of
the number.
All the math.
You get lost.
All the math that we've done, 20 times 25, 5 times 100, 50, no. 50 times 5, it's too early in the morning for me to do that.
Oh, yeah, the math teacher must love you.
Yes. Oh, yes. It's actually one of the strands in the math curriculum is base 10. And so we are kicking ass on that, too.
I don't know. I think we're allowed to say that.
I guess we just did.
Okay. And I have to ask, is this something that, The funding squeeze has brought about? Has it always been like this for an art teacher, that you have to really care about how much of something you're using?
Not as much as now. 15 years ago, I had 210 students at Meeker, and now nearly 500, same price, And actually, my budget is $2.50 per student for the whole year. So I feel like I need to be creative in the ways that we gather materials to make art. Mm-hmm. And I do am a big believer in community-based art education. There's a woman across the street from Maker who gave me all those coffee stirring sticks.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was wondering if there are any recycled materials being used.
Very much so. Very much so. We'll probably show 500 toilet paper rolls in some fashion. And, and we had in the fall people collecting 500 pine cones. I mean, it's a fact of life, you know. We need to be a little bit more cognizant of our resources and how we use them. So there's a little bit of science involved in the 500 project too, I think.
Yeah. And any stories about how students are getting that message about their use of resources?
Yes. Well, they're finding out that 500 really is quite a large number, and they're finding out about the resource of time too. Some of them have had some big ideas, and as we approach our deadline of Earth Day, they're finding out that, wow.
500 minutes.
500 minutes, that's right. Yeah.
The whole day.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it sounds like you've got a great thing going. I bet you're actually looking forward to going back to work today.
Yes. Oh, yes, ma'am. I'm anxious to see what has transpired over spring break.
All right. Well, Susan Norris, otherwise known as Coach Norris, of Meeker Elementary, with her 500 project. And we'll be check the papers around Earth Day. There will be an event at Meeker celebrating her and her students' accomplishments.
Thank you.
Well, it could easily be said that we don't hear nearly enough about the arts and their impact on learning and development. We hear a lot about the importance of STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, but not of STEAM, all of that combined with the arts. Melissa Miller, the program director of the Iowa Water Center, grew up with the arts and knows better. So when she was planning this week's 10th annual Water Center Conference, the idea of having an evening devoted to the art of water grabbed her and wouldn't let go. The conference is designed to bring together professionals from agriculture, water treatment, stormwater management, watershed conservation, all under one roof so they can benefit from cross-disciplinary conversations and perspectives. This Wednesday evening event, Art of Water, is designed to bring the community into the mix. Here's Melissa Miller talking about this event, which is the main event of today's Local Talk.
We are coming up on the 10th annual Iowa Water Conference, which is an annual event held here in Ames each year. It's a statewide event. We draw between 300 and 400 water research professionals, water professionals, city managers, civil engineers, all across the gamut from urban to rural. We get a lot of representation from the Department of Ag and Land Stewardship as well as the Department of Natural Resources. In addition, since this is our 10th anniversary, what we've done is we are bringing in a community event for Wednesday evening at Stevens Auditorium that will begin at 6 p.m. And it's called Art of Water 2016, which is using the arts to teach people about water, water quality, and water usage. This event has two headlining features, and we didn't want to put one over another because they're both so very unique, and they present this information in such a unique way. So the pre-show gallery exhibit starts at 6 p.m., and we will have informational artworks that have been created by senior students in the Ames High School Bluestem Institute, which is a capstone seminar. And these students have worked with Lexicon of Sustainability and Project Localize, which is a national effort to create these beautiful posters. They're really photo mosaics. It's hard to call them posters when they're really works of arts. And what they do is they define water quality terms from a technical perspective, social, cultural. They did all kinds of interviews with farmers and with water treatment plant workers and Des Moines Water Works. And they've taken a lot of photos and they have all this writing on them. And the students will be present to present their work and to talk about the things that they've done and how they've created these artworks. And then at 7 p.m., we'll have everyone go into the actual auditorium for Body of Water. And Body of Water was created last year by a biology professor and a dance professor at Luther College. And they originally presented this in Decorah last March about this time to three sold-out shows and have since gone on to Grinnell and presented there and had a really warm reception. And Body of Water tells the story of the Dry Run Creek watershed in Iowa. And what it uses is video with interviews with people that live in the watershed from all perspectives. And while the videos are playing, the dancers, along with an original music score, will emulate water as the elixir of life. Afterward, they will hold a facilitated dialogue with the audience to talk about what they just saw and to talk about how they can use that information in their own lives. Jody Enos-Barlage is the biology professor at Luther, and when they first started talking with the performers about water, they were coming up with uses of water that impact their lives far beyond nourishment, but also spiritual nourishment. Water during your baptism, water to clean your infant child or your newborn baby in the bath, and water meaning more to us than just what we get out of the tap when we take that for granted, when we just open it up to take a drink, and how each of our actions with water affects everyone else's story with water. As soon as I heard Jody talking about this, because Jody is on our conference planning committee, I told her, we will present this in Ames. I don't care how I have to go about getting this done. This is something that people need to see, and we will get people there because people need to see this beautiful thing that you have done to marry the arts and the sciences.
Wow, so you are a big part of making this happen.
This is kind of my baby. You know, I don't have a science background, even though I'm working for the Iowa Water Center, which is, you know, essentially a research organization. And I grew up in the arts, doing music and theater and things like that. And so when I see things that can use music and use art and use dance to tell people about things that otherwise they wouldn't be invested in or they wouldn't understand as well, it's so important to me that people experience that, because we can't all learn from a textbook.
And Melissa Miller was so committed to getting people to this event, The Art of Water, that she garnered enough sponsors to offer the event free of charge to anyone who wanted to attend.
Our lead funders for the project, a gift was given by Betty and Dennis Keeney, a private foundation gift. The ISU Committee on Lectures, which is funded by student government, the ISU Department of Agronomy, the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture, Des Moines Water Works, Environmental Working Group, Iowa Environmental Council, and People's Company all gave very generously, as well as the in-kind support that we've received from Luther College in preparing for this event.
And that was Melissa Miller, program coordinator of the Iowa Water Center, which is headquartered on the ISU campus. The program she described starts at 6 p.m. Wednesday night at Stevens Auditorium, when seniors from Ames High will present their posters from their multidisciplinary seminar. I invited one of the students down to the studio and heard what the experience in this class was like for her. Here in the studio with me is Alexia Clinton, a senior at Ames High School, involved in the Blue STEM Institute. It's the first year of the Blue STEM Institute, which is like a senior seminar.
Yeah, so senior seminar. It's composed of three classes. We have our sociology, we have our environmental science, and we have our advanced English.
And it's a seminar that leads to an outcome, like a project that you all do.
Yeah. Last semester's project, we finished water quality posters that we're going to post around to, you know, spread the word, the already spread word of Iowa's diminishing water quality.
And this is going to be part of the Wednesday evening event.
Yes, yes.
Over at Stevens Auditorium.
It is.
So you'll be there with your poster.
I will.
Did you do this with colleagues? Did you share the responsibility, or is it your poster?
No, I have two colleagues in my class that helped me, Jackson Hamstreet and Alvin Tan. We made two posters together. And as a class, I think we have about 32 posters.
And these posters are kind of helping develop a vocabulary.
Yeah, they're making it the terms that are need-to-knows throughout this whole process a lot easier to understand for everybody along the board. So the issue can be more well understood.
And your terms are?
Conservation buffers and the INRS.
INRS.
INRS, the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a real mystery to a lot of people,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yes, it is a real mystery to a lot of people. It's composed of basically some guidelines that were put together by Iowa State the DNR, and these set the guidelines, are supposed to set the guidelines for lowering the amount of harmful nutrients in the water. And this was inspired by the hypoxia crisis in the Gulf of Mexico. And
hypoxia was another term.
Hypoxia was another term. It's the buildup of nitrogen and phosphorus in the water. So all the algae blooms take the oxygen from the living creatures in the water. So,
and that's in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yes.
Okay. So, so as a process of doing this poster, which these posters, I've seen them, they look really cool.
Yeah.
And I know that last year they kind of focused on food and gardening. In the process of doing these posters, you interview a lot of people, right?
Yes.
And, you know, hold the microphone and try to find the best words.
Yeah, we become journalists in a sense, almost, because we have to try to get a narrative from every single point of view possible to make the most factual and the most accessible information, I guess. So first we worked with Douglas Gayton. He taught us how to put these photos together. And then we each, once we got our terms, we went out into the field to find experts. Like I have interviewed Martin Cipitello.
Is he?
No. He is a scientist at Iowa State, who helped us better understand the way conservation buffers worked. So he took us out to a farm where there were three different types of buffers, so we could see close up how they were working. Because it's a lot easier to understand something when you're face to face with it, and you're
And then you can communicate that
a little bit better. Yeah.
Right. And then who did you interview when it came to the Iowa nutrient reduction strategy?
Oh, we interviewed Kent Hykens, who is a USDA scientist. And it was hard to put the INRS on a poster since it's 200 pages of black and white words that are very, very hard to understand.
Did you talk to other people who are upset about the Iowa?
Actually, it was really hard to get a lot of people to talk to us because the word got out that, you know, we were working with Bill Stowe. So, you know, like, that's very scary, I guess, to some people. So we got turned down a lot more than we got picked up, essentially.
So your class as a whole was working with Bill?
Yeah. Our class as a whole, we got the opportunity to go tour the water facility.
The world's largest nitrogen removal system.
Yeah. And we got a lot of opportunities that I wish a lot of other people had, to, you know, get inside of the system and see how things work. But,
well, I hear that the performance that is going to accompany your posters displays is going to be just outstanding, phenomenal.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited to. I'm really interested in this whole the body of water. You know, like, I'm interested in the movement. I'm intrigued by it. I'm ready to be surprised.
And you say you're not a words person. So what is your thing?
My thing, I'm visuals, kind of. So I like to, I put stuff together. And I'm a thinker, so I come up with ideas. Like, say, how can we be more productive? Like, you know, like, I don't want to say bossy, but I'm a suggester, and I suggest to those who like to boss people around. Okay. So,
as part of this experience, you're learning your role in a group.
Yeah, exactly. I'm learning how to work with a group in a more fluent way, you know? I'm learning how to take feedback. I'm learning how to give feedback. I'm learning how to communicate.
And that, I think, is one of the essentials to solving the water problem in Iowa.
Yeah, is teamwork. Teamwork. That's what the whole Bluestem Institute is about, kind of, is teamwork. Building our own culture of genuine interest and wanting to build off each other's learning.
Right. And the visuals have a lot to do with that because it makes these terms that sound so technical, you put them in.
Appealing. It makes it appealing. It makes you want to, like, oh my gosh, that's some great looking corn. Like, let me read more about the root structure of it. You know, like, it's eye catching. You got to be able to catch an eye to catch an audience. So.
Very well put. Okay, well, thank you, Alexia.
Thank you.
You did great.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you did great. That was Alexia Clinton of Ames High School talking about the Blue STEM Institute. And I'm sure, dear listener, you can hear from these last three interviews what a privilege it is to host Local Talk to bring you the voices of people like Susan Norris, Melissa Miller, and Alexia, who make this such a fabulously vibrant community. I next bring you the story of two women, friends and colleagues at Luther College, who feel as passionately about their community as we do about ours. These are science professor Jody Enos-Berlage and dance professor Jane Hawley, who worked together to create the work Body of Water that Melissa Miller wanted so badly to bring to Ames and that will happen in Stevens Auditorium on Wednesday night. Jody and Jane started teaching at Luther College the same year, in 2000, and over the years, their professional friendship grew. In 2006, they participated in a teaching partnership whereby the dance teacher, Jane, attended Jody's lectures on microbiology and Jody attended Jane's basic class, Movement Fundamentals. What brought their collaboration to a new level in 2010 was a phone call that Jody got out of the blue from an ISU extension agent that was partnering with a group of landowners organized around the Dry Run Creek watershed. The agent was reaching out to Jody because of the creek's impaired status.
He linked up with me because it was a bacterial pollution problem. And I was the microbiologist in the local area. And so I talked to him and discovered that not only was it a bacterial problem, but the watershed was the one that I live in. And I have, in fact, we both have agricultural upbringings. And so I'd always had an interest and had read about, you know, ag connection with water quality and the many challenges that Iowa faces. And I'd always thought about, you know, as I saw the stuff in the paper, I might be interested someday in looking at that.
Dry Run Creek is a central feature of the town of Decorah, where Luther College is located, where Jane and Jody teach, and where young people like to play.
It comes right through the Decorah campground, Twin Springs, and empties into the Upper Iowa River in the city of Decorah. And that area is a place frequented by families, by campers. Now it's right along the new bike trail. There's a lot of public attention to that because there's a recreational presence.
So, led by her curiosity and her connection to the watershed, Jody jumped into the water monitoring research with both feet. She and her students measured E. coli bacteria. This is an indicator species present in the intestinal tracts of all mammals. If E. coli is present, then other bacteria, which are more difficult or more expensive to detect, also more dangerous, are likely to be present. Over the 4 years of her research, Jody's students caught the bug for this work and, as you will hear, made a difference.
So there have been over 15 students that have been involved with this. It's resulted in lots of research projects for them, senior projects, presentations for them at regional professional meetings, publications jointly between myself and students. And for the watershed group, it's also ended up in being much more attractive for funding because we've had all this data. It's a group of landowners there. They wanted to improve the water quality. That started with monitoring to try to figure out, are there more prominent locations in the watershed that might be contributing? If so, let's find out what they are. And then let's try to get funding to offer incentives to do sort of a targeted approach if that was possible. So we ended up using our data. It was a big part of getting a grant from the state to help fund those incentives. The results indicate the importance of doing a comprehensive study because we sampled during rain conditions and non-rain conditions. And as it turns out, that the more prominent sites in terms of contributions are not the same in those two different conditions. What we identified was that when it's raining, certain sites appear as elevated, and when it's not raining, everything is much lower, but different sites end up becoming the higher sites. And even though the numbers of E. coli are much lower when it's not raining, they were still above our state standards And that's when people are going to be in the water. So we just have to really keep in mind that that's just as important. And it also became clear that the nuances after the rain event. So we call a rain event at least a half inch of rain, and we're out there within 24 hours. But it matters whether we're out there 2 hours after the rain or 12. And it also really matters how much rain. You know, anywhere from a half inch to over 2 to sometimes over 3. And so you get huge diversity in the data from those. So it really emphasized to us when you're doing water monitoring, you have to take into account so many variables because they are causing that data to shift. And it's really important in terms of how someone chooses to interpret. So for us, what it meant for asking for a grant was we targeted both. We targeted wet weather sources, which might be field-applied manure. So, for example, we got money to do manure spreader calibrations. So basically, how much manure is coming out of your manure spreader as you're actually running it. You can determine that quantitatively. Usually it's more than what they think that is going on the field. You know, they're interested in that too because that's a fertilizer for them and they don't have an interest in overusing that fertilizer. But there is an interest on, I would say, both parties for that sort of thing. So if we can say we can do this and we're funded to come out and do this for you, that would be a good thing. Wet weather sources might be manure storage facilities that just aren't able to hold under certain level of rain. Mm-hmm. And so we got money to try to do structures that would improve that. And then the dry weather sources include direct access to the water of livestock. And so direct deposition of fecal matter into the water. And there's quite a bit of that direct access in the watershed. And some of our higher sites were consistent with where places were that had direct access. And so we got funding for putting in cattle walkways to try to restrict access. But a large part of the watershed work is also not just doing the monitoring and getting the data and getting the funding. There's a whole nother piece of it that involves engagement with the landowners. And that's been a part of our work as well. I mean, myself and students, you know, traveling the watershed, knocking on doors, saying, here is the data that we have. We've got funding for this. Would you, you know, be interested in coming to a meeting? So the part about engaging people, that may be the most challenging part. And that is really, I think, where, you know, Jane, when we would meet and talk about what we were doing and my research and where she really started to respond.
This is Local Talk. I'm your host, Greta Anderson, and we've been listening to Jody Enos-Berlage describe her water monitoring research with Luther College students on the Dry Run Creek watershed. Jody collaborated with the professor of dance, Jane Hawley, to develop a performance that will be presented this Wednesday at 7 p.m. at Stevens Auditorium. Here's Jane Hawley.
Well, just as part of my job, I have the responsibility of devising a new performance every year, and so I thought I wanted to collaborate with Jody's research and use dance for social activism and also keep it local. So Body of Water came into being, and we had dancers going into the watershed, and we had science people coming into the dance studio to give each other feedback on the research that we were doing in both disciplines. Sometimes we would do literal interpretations of the research through the body, and other times we would abstract it. So a literal example would be just the molecular construction of the water molecule. And when Jody started explaining that to the dancers, I said, just literally enact that with your bodies. And so as water changes its states, it vibrates faster or slower. And as we started to just embody the states and the idea of the molecular interaction, even the dancers themselves said, I never really understood this when I was in fifth grade. And now all of a sudden it's so simple because they just did it with their bodies. And then an abstraction, this was for the dancers to establish some movement vocabulary to use for choreography. And I said, okay, take a week and just notice any body of water, just any way you can observe the patterns and flow of water, of currents, or just different ways the water moves. and pick three patterns and integrate those patterns into the upper torso and the arms. And then I thought, well, what if we put them kind of like in a shape of a river? And so they're sitting on their haunches kind of. And so that started to create a beautiful abstract image.
So I heard you describe two kind of neutral states of water, the molecular mm-hmm. structure and its flow. Mm-hmm. What about this activism part?
Right. The students quickly realized their part in how they were contributing to practices that we don't want to do. They started to think. And Jody and I had a lot of conversations about this because you can get really angry, especially when you're not a landowner and landowners are not thinking about what they're doing to a resource that is everyone's. So Jody and I had a lot of conversations about, well, what is needed in order for all people to feel that they can't do this anymore? Genuinely stop the practices that are harming the waters. We need it, right? And so we talked about love, and I said, we are made of water. And then we started to have that whole conversation about how much we are made of. And so as artists, the students and I wanted to show how the body is water, right? And everything that we choreographed or everything that we started to come up with is that you almost don't see people, but you see bodies. And then you relate this idea of the body to the land or the body to the soil, right? Or we come from natural materials. And that, for example, we took these patterns that we did by watching water, right? And I said, well, what if you just go backwards and do the same material and you're hanging backwards and what happens? And then what if we just start pushing all of these bodies like you are the river, you are the trash, and roll right up to the feet of us, you know, who are watching in the audience. So we literally start to think of ourselves as the water, think of ourselves swimming and all that.
So when I saw some of the early constructs of the choreography, these sorts of movements that Jane is describing as a viewer start to make me uncomfortable because the dancers are uncomfortable and they're in unusual positions for dancers. But what the dancers did, this part about coming right up to my presence, it made me cry spontaneously. Because I was so overtaken by bodies being part of the pollution and being mixed in with. It was quite overwhelming.
And it's all at your feet, which kind of suggests your responsibility.
Your part, yes. It was like, it was right in your face and you could not ignore it. And it just, I mean, almost literally touching you. Yeah. And it was at that moment that I really understood the power of what Jane could do and what her students could do. Because it evoked an emotion in me that I don't get out of watching a scientific talk about water or that I think I could deliver in a science talk. A huge component of this that was going on simultaneously with the dance development was myself and Ian Karstens, who had just graduated from Luther and who had a special interest in talent and cinematography. We spent hours and hours and hours interviewing landowners, leadership of the Dry One Creek Watershed Association, the Decorah mayor and city administrator, people involved in ag organization leadership, just hearing their thoughts about water, hearing them talk about how they felt about it, what sorts of practices they've considered, concerns that they have. And then we spent more than that interview time trying to review and edit and piece together a story. And so the performance itself is this kind of unusual mix, I think, between live dance and music and video, and then the dance becomes very connected with that video material at some points. You know, sometimes they're operating totally independently, and sometimes they're syncing.
So you're hearing, you're seeing, and you're understanding things at a much more rapid pace than if you were just in a lecture hall.
And deeper. That was the crux of the message. It's about how people feel, because how they feel about something is ultimately going to determine how they act. And so everybody has it, I think, an innate love for this resource, but not everyone is at the same level of attention to that or awareness of that.
Right.
And I'll speak for myself. I did not have the level of awareness and love and affection before this watershed work. But after years of being out there, of seeing each site, getting to know it really well, noticing if something's different the next year, noticing a land use change that's going on, and just kind of realizing that flow to Decora, this connection. We happened in our interviews to run across a family that their son did paragliding in the watershed with a GoPro camera on his foot. And he had all this video, aerial video of our watershed.
And you see the river like it's a bloodstream in the body?
Yes, yes. And then when you look at this stream and the collection of the streams going into a central channel, that's like your blood vessel system.
We make all those direct relationships really undeniable.
And that was Jane Hawley and Jody Enos-Berlage of Luther College talking about their dance performance, Body of Water, which will be presented at Stevens Auditorium at 6:30 p.m. Wednesday evening. This is Local Talk on KHOI. I'm Greta Anderson, your host for the day, and we're going to take a quick break with a brief reprise of the song Skunk River by Lindsay Nissen, who sang this song for us 10 days ago in the studio. When we return, I'll be talking about another community event that's going on this Wednesday on campus. Lime green spring, my favorite color. We're not quite there yet, but it won't be long. This is Local Talk. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson, and Terry Potter has joined me in the studio. Terry is the director of a local consulting firm that does work in the U.S. and abroad, specializing in chemical coatings. But for our purposes, he has been associated with the grassroots group Amos for about a year, and his focus has been the work in Ames having to do with affordable housing. He's here to talk about a conference on Wednesday that Amos put together and that is being jointly sponsored by the City of Ames, Iowa State University, and Story County. It's called A Place to Call Home, Options for Housing Stability in Ames and Story County. Welcome to the show, Terry Potter.
Yes, thank you very much, Greta, for having me.
And this conference, I know you've been working on a long time. What is the purpose behind getting people together?
Several purposes in mind. I think the most prominent is to raise the issue of and get moving in the direction of establishing a housing trust fund for Story County, for obviously for the county and for the City of Ames.
Okay, and we on KHOI aired some information about local housing trust funds. Eric Burmeister from the Polk County Local Housing Trust Fund came up and talked about that structure and what it can do. we don't have one here in Story County, a local housing trust fund. And can you describe sort of what these entities do and why they're important?
Sure, I'd be glad to. So a housing trust fund is essentially an entity that can collect money from a variety of sources. For example, the state of Iowa funds several housing authorities, housing trust funds throughout the state, but with Story County not having a trust fund, those monies are not available to us. So it's basically a bank account, if you will, where we can receive in Story County monies from the state, from federal sources, and also from private sources.
That's right. Eric Burmeister told us we're leaving money on the table by not having a local housing trust fund here in Story County.
Yes, that's correct. And so we think that in terms of what's a doable action, a doable objective, that's one of the main things that we want to talk about at the conference on Wednesday.
Okay, so sort of galvanizing support around this idea and moving to the next step.
That's correct.
And I noticed on the conference there's also a section that calls about the role of developers. So you've invited developers to this conference.
Sure. I mean, the purpose of the conference is to invite a variety of stakeholders, and certainly developers are an important stakeholder group within the community because they're the ones who are going to be, you know, putting the nails into the wood, as it were, you know, in terms of helping to construct this affordable housing.
Okay. So affordable housing is the issue, and we just don't have enough of it here in Ames.
That's correct. I mean, there are several people. If you think of a particular example, we have a number of people who have two minimum income households, and they have to pay well over 50% of their income just to pay rent on an average apartment in Ames. I spoke with a woman yesterday from my church who lives on Social Security, and after she pays, again, more than 50% of her income per month on rent, she has about $50 a week to live on, and she has to choose whether to spend that on prescription drugs or food. So that's the kind of situation that we're in. I mean, we've gotten here for some not bad reasons. We've had, of course, an increase in the student population. We've had an increase in employment in Ames. So those are good problems to have, but it also puts pressure on the local housing market.
And sometimes the affordable housing doesn't get built as readily as the housing that developers can make a bigger profit margin on.
Right. And so that's a part of the idea of having the housing trust fund, that in some ways we can use that money to supplement what developers would normally get, and so to thereby provide some incentive for them to have affordable housing as part of their development.
Okay. And it probably means a lot then that the City of Ames and Story County, as well as Iowa State University, are all sponsoring this conference.
That's right, because we thought it was necessary to have a true community action. And so none of the problems that we face can be solved without engagement from all of those entities, from the university, from the City of Ames, and from Story County.
And have you heard that, for instance, the city council members will be there and the supervisors and so on?
Well, we know some of the city council members will be there. I don't have the exact count because I don't have the registration list in front of me, but we do know that there will be some members of the county government as well as the city government.
And there's a lunch program that seems kind of intriguing, Lunch and Readers Theater. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I don't know a lot about the Reader's Theater, but I do know, as a little bit of a preview, that it's essentially going to be residents who have gone through the issues associated with unaffordable housing and what it's meant to them. And it's going to be more dramatic than just a simple – it's going to involve actual people who have had the issues that we face.
And so much stress is put on people when they have to stretch their budgets so tightly, as you described, you know, having to decide between medicine and food. These are choices we don't want people to be having to make.
That's correct.
And probably, you know, between childcare and rent is another one that you don't want to have to make.
Well,
that
absolutely.
Choice.
I mean, and it goes beyond just, you know, you think about adults or people who are struggling for an income, but it also affects the children. There are about 200 homeless children in the Ames School District. And if you can imagine, obviously the stress on their parents, but imagine the stress on the students when they don't know where they're going to be sleeping that night.
So. Right. So Amos, the group that's put this together, is a collaboration of churches in Ames and then also in Des Moines. Can you explain a little to people what AMOS is?
Sure. So AMOS stands for a Mid-Iowa Organizing Strategy. And basically, as you described, we are a cluster of advocacy and organizing groups in central Iowa, both in the Ames and Story County area as well as in Des Moines. And as you pointed out correctly, most of the member organizations are churches, but there are also other organizations that participate in AMOS. And so AMOS has a variety of, as I said, advocacy areas. Affordable housing is one of them. Mental health is one of them. And there are several others.
Okay. And so through joining arms with forces with other people who are concerned about, you know, those who don't have a voice so much in our community, you can effect some changes. And that's exactly, I guess, what you're trying to do here.
That's correct.
Okay. I see that on the registration for this conference, it's March 23rd, as we said. It's at the Sheman Building, and it goes from 8 to 3, and lunch is included. So there is a price. We don't share the price on over the air, but the registration sort of goes down. It's reasonable, I can say, and it goes down depending on how many people from a group or from an organization apply. So that's per church, right?
Per church or per organization. So if you have three or more members from the same church or the same organization that attend the conference, then it's at a reduced price. I would also say that if you have the flyer in front of you or if you've looked it up online, the on-site web registration I learned yesterday is actually closed. And so you can register by calling the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau at 515-232-4032, or you can register in person on the day of the conference.
Okay, so it's not restricted. That's great to know. Okay, so once again, it is called Place to Call Home.
Right.
A Place to Call Home, which we want, that's a good thing. Place to Call Home, Options for Housing Stability in Ames and Story County. And that housing stability means not having your rent so high that, you know, when you have a bad month, you end up on the street.
Right.
Well, thank you so much, Terry Potter, for joining us. Terry Potter from the UCC Church and Amos, helping to organize a conference on affordable housing that has been sponsored by Iowa State, City of Ames, and Story County. That's on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, 8 to 3. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Greta Anderson. The show started with Susan Norris, or Coach Norris, of Meeker Elementary, talking about her 500 project with students. We then turned our focus to the Art of Water, an arts performance to complement the 10th Annual Iowa Water Conference. Melissa Miller, conference organizer, started us off, followed by Ames High School senior Alexia Clinton and the two Luther College professors, Jody Enos-Burlage and Jane Hawley, who developed the performance. Finally, we spoke with Terry Potter of Amos. This show will re-air at noon and 7 p.m. and is available anytime today through our automatic archives. Just look for Local Talk. A show description along with relevant links will also be posted on our webpage, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. Thanks to our webmaster, Ron Carson, for doing that. You can also follow KHOI on Facebook and Twitter and get updates and reminders about Local Talk. Our engineer for the show was Nadia Abdelazim. Our theme music is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Lindsay Nissen sing her song, Skunk River. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or stop by our studio at 410 Douglas Avenue. You can also follow our links on our webpage, khoifm.org, and connect to us through email. We're always looking for volunteers of every kind, so please, if you like our station, come join us and see what it's all about. Your contribution as audience as well as your generous donations are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.